Hello and welcome to SalladCast. We're back for a finance special, and one we've done this quite a few years, but we're back again. So hi, Chris, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Ollie. Good to be here.
So yeah, thanks for joining me, Chris. And Dan, you've joined me as well?
Yeah, evening, Ollie. All well with you?
Yep, good, thank you. Yep, good. So we've got Chris and Dan on the pod, and Derby County have just scored, so it's 2-1. And we're joined by an expert, an Ant, has joined the podcast. So yeah, when we talk about football, we're normally just rabbiting on, but we've got someone who knows what he's talking about on the podcast this week. So welcome back on the podcast, Ant.
Thanks, Ollie. Always a pleasure, mate.
So we've got Ant on the podcast to talk about the accounts. Ant will give us a bit of a summary on the accounts from his perspective, what he views them, and obviously in his role. So Ant, could you give us a bit of background on, you know, what your day job is and kind of what expertise you can bring to the podcast tonight and why the fans should listen to you? Maybe that's why I put on it.
Well, I'll speak, and whether they listen is up to them. My background is, first and foremost, I'm a Shrewsbury fan, so Shrewsbury lad, and I've supported the team since the early 1990s. So a fair few years, a number of years have hurt, but the occasional up in there as well. And always really keen to keep following them and see how they're doing. And then my profession is I'm an accountant, and my day job within that profession is I'm an external audit partner. So my job is to look at company accounts and essentially make sure they're not full of crap, basically. And if they are, to make sure the changes are made so that they reflect the truth of the numbers of the companies that I'm looking at.
So you're a Shrewsbury Town fan and you're an accountant. So yes, I think it's fair to say you're ideal to come on the podcast, Dan, to talk about the accounts.
It would seem so. Let's see what he's got to say first, though, Wally. I'm going to reserve judgment.
Most definitely. So maybe just to kind of help fans understand, when do these... So accounts came out, was it 4 or 5 days ago now? It was Thursday. Yeah, which was perfect for me. I spent like basically 20 hours going to Poland and back for the day, and I get all these notifications on my watch, and I look down and I see the accounts are out. So what did the accounts tell us, Ant, and when do they relate to?
Yeah, so every company has to, of a certain size, has to file accounts in the public domain. And they do that via the company's house website. And for most private companies, like Shrewsbury Town Football Club Limited, they have 9 months after their financial year-end date to publish the accounts. So the accounts that have come out covering the club are for the 12 months or the year ended 30th of June 2023. And so the club had 9 months after that date, i.e. the end of March 2024, to publish those accounts with Companies House. That's why you're seeing them now.
Cool. And it was an interesting set of accounts, and one that has been kind of waiting, fans have been waiting for a while, because we all kind of turn our minds back to the summer. There was a number of departures. And as a podcast, you know, we've been interested in what the accounts were going to show. And what do the accounts show for effectively last season?
Yeah, and that's the first important point, Ollie, is these set of accounts cover the 22-23 season. So they're already out of date, if you think of it in that regards, because we've had 9 months since the year-end date. So anything that's happened since then is effectively not included in these accounts. So if Shrewsbury sold a player, for example, and we know there were some players sold around the pre-season time last year, Luke Lee being one. If Shrewsbury received any transfer fees for those, and equally if they paid any transfer fees for players, they won't be detailed in these accounts. So that's the first thing we're talking about. These accounts are past looking, they're out of date. What they do show for the 22-23 season is the club made a big loss, just pretty much bang on £3 million. And what that means is that in those 12 months, they had costs that were 3 million higher than the sales they made. And breaking those two numbers down a little bit further, when I talk about sales within a football club, we're largely talking about things like gate receipts, like TV money, merchandise sales, any payments from other entities like the Premier League, for example. And then when we talk about costs, primarily for a football club, you put these into two buckets. And one is salaries, wages and salaries. The biggest part of those are going to be your playing squad, but it also includes all of your administration. So people who work in the ticket office, the club shop, the IT guys, the people who run the academy, all of those people, it includes their wages and salaries as well. And then the second bucket is kind of utilities or bills to keep the lights on. So lighting, heat, water, electricity, any other costs that the club involve. So for there to be a 3 million difference when the sales in the year were, you know, about 6 million, that tells you really the size of cost that the club incurred when compared to the sales they made. So that's the first big thing to take away from this is £3 million loss, much higher than any other losses the club have incurred. And the second thing is the cash balance. So one of the common misconceptions is people hear profit and then they hear cash. And they sometimes get confused at the difference between one and the other. You can make a loss of 3 million. That doesn't necessarily mean that your cash is reduced by 3 million. In the same way that you can make a profit of 3 million and it doesn't mean your cash has gone up by 3 million. And I'll give you a quick example of that. Say you were a business that sold cars, right? And in your financial year, I was the car salesman and I sold Dan a car, right, for 20 grand. But I said to Dan, I'm selling you this car. Okay, it costs you 20 grand, but you can pay me next year. Now, from an accounting point of view, I've sold you the car. I've given you the car. I'm going to recognize that as a sale. From a cash point of view, I'm not going to get that cash until next year. So there can be a difference between profit or loss and cash. Now, in the club's terms, their cash balance has reduced from just over 1.5 million to pretty much nothing as of 30th of June 2023. And that's important because you need cash to pay the bills. Every month you've got to pay the players' wages, your staff's wages, you've got to pay all of your utility bills. And if you don't, then there's big repercussions, right? We've seen it with a number of clubs in our league and other leagues. If you fail to pay your staff salaries, including the players, you could be deducted points. If you fail to pay your suppliers, so like the energy providers, etc., they can take you to court. And in the worst case, they can actually get a business put into administration or closed down. So this is really serious stuff, right? If you've got no cash, then as a business, it really threatens your ability to continue. So those are the two things from a summary level I want people to take away is big loss for the year. And more worrying is the cash balance is significantly reduced as well. Probably pause for breath there.
Now, the warning lights have gone off at Hough Towers, Anne. I've not heard anything about points deductions coming our way or such things, but the way you explained it makes me wonder, so what happened in the autumn? Now, I know that you don't know, but clearly we've not been deducted points. So someone has found some cash from somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's right, Dan. So what I'm going to slightly contradict myself in what I said earlier about not being able to see what's happened post year end. So what we can tell in the accounts is in the year to the 30th of June 2023, the directors put in about £500,000 of cash into the club in return for an interest-free loan. So they're not making anything out of it. They've clearly done it to top up the cash reserves so that the club can continue to pay its staff and its bills as it comes due. And the other thing that businesses have to disclose is if something's happened in the period from the date of the accounts to today's date, that it's of such magnitude that they should share it with the people who are going to use those accounts. They need to say it. And actually, the accounts go on to say that the money that the directors have put into the club has increased since 30th of June 2023. So it's just over £1 million that they've contributed to the cash reserves. So that's where that money's coming from.
Potentially temporarily, though, because you often hear, don't you, about cash injection into clubs being converted to shares. No, they could be. I guess they could be converted to shares because at the moment it's a loan.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you've got a loan, you've got, from a director, you've got two options, right? Three options. One is you could leave it as a loan forever, which means that you're accepting that money is owed back to the directors at some point. The second is you can pay it back. So that cash that's gone into the club at some point, you know, we sell a player or something, we say, right, we've got that money, we can pay off those loans now. Or at the control of the directors who've put that money in, you can say, well, I'll leave that money in the club, but I want shares in return for it. So essentially the club still benefits. You as a director own a few more shares. The club no longer has a loan outstanding on its books.
And is that something we could figure out in the next set of accounts? Or is that something that would be quite hard to figure out in the future?
Yeah, potentially. So the next set of accounts will be for the year to June 2024. If those loans have been repaid or converted to shares or left where they are, we'll be able to spot that in the next set of accounts. But we're not going to know that for a year until that set of accounts is publicly available.
And it's, so we're talking about effectively, we lost 50% of our income in 1 year, which is quite an alarming amount. If Dan's wife found out that he earns a certain amount and he spent twice as much as he earned income outgoing, that's not very stable. And that's why Dan talks about point deductions and things like that. We haven't had point deductions, but this is an alarming amount of money for a club with a turnover of 6 million to lose 3 million.
I mean, is there any, or are there any likely organisations who can come up with a significant sum of money to plug that gap? Now, obviously, people look at the chairman, but I mean, the Premier League owe us some money, right? What's all that about?
Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of the detail of the discussions between the Premier League and the Football League. There's clearly ongoing discussions about support that the Premier League can offer, whether that will just be paid out and clubs will be able to use it as they see fit. Will there be conditions attached? Who knows? At the moment, that's not decided, and therefore the club, quite rightly, haven't put in their accounts any recognition of that. You know, that would be a nice bonus if that arrived. But if I was the people running the club, I wouldn't be hanging my hat on that. In the same way that if you're at work and you're hoping to get a bonus, you know, you'd be a bit silly if you'd already thought about how you're going to spend that bonus.
So in the summer, and as I recall it, there was quite a lot in the chairman's statement about the Premier League money. And I seem to remember it had wording to the effect that when the money from the Premier League comes in, the picture will be a lot healthier, will be a lot happier. And yet, if I read these accounts right, it shows money from the Premier League this year as being zero, down from $500,000 last year. So even if we'd had that money, I'm reading that our £500,000 would have, yeah, obviously be very welcome, but that still leaves a £2.5 million loss. The Premier League money is not going to solve our problems overnight, is it? If I'm reading things right.
No, that's right. And like I say, $500,000 is a significant amount of money, especially in cash terms for a club like us. But it's not suddenly £500,000 we can go and spend on a player or two. That is going to be money that means that the directors don't have to put their hands in their pockets, or they might get some of those interest-free loans back.
Yeah, and I've got a question that I'm almost certain you're not going to be able to answer, but it intrigues me. Now, clearly, we're paying our players a significant amount of money, as you'd expect. We're a League One football club. They don't come on the minimum wage. I'm intrigued to know, when these contracts were signed with the relevant players, did whoever was signing them off, and I assume it was Brian Caldwell as the CEO, did they think, we're going to cover this because hospitality is going to go up, because we're going to finish top of League One and get promoted, because something else is going to happen? What do you think the thinking was there? Because it seems to me like this is a significant overspend. This isn't a fractions. And I'm wondering what the logic was of paying out some of the money that we clearly paid out and yet not getting returns elsewhere. Is it cock up, or is this mismanagement, really?
Yeah, and I'm gonna put out a famous quote that was first said 100+ years ago, which is, comparison is the thief of joy, right? We shouldn't always compare to other football clubs, but you know, looking at our result financially versus other clubs in League One, it doesn't actually look that bad. And I think a lot of the strategy of a lot of League One clubs is to overspend, right? And to say we'll find a way through it, but actually it's worth it because it gives us a chance of getting promoted or going on a cup run or unearthing a gem that is actually going to bring in a real stack of cash that's then going to allow us to reinvest. Right, so I don't know the answer, Dan, but I suspect that there was some calculated guesses going on about if we bought or if we took on these more expensive players, could it result in a cup run, which would bring in some money? Were we thinking that the Premier League were going to provide us with some more cash that would help plug the hole? Did we think that actually if we brought in better players that some of them could be sold and that was part of the plan? Or was it a miscalculation? Right? Was it that actually the players ended up costing us more? Because footballers' contracts are complex things, right? You could have a contract where you're paying a player a few grand a week and you think, right, so over a year, that's going to cost us 150 grand, right? But if there's a clause in there that says player is a goalkeeper and for every clean sheet, they get an extra, you know, they double their wages for that match, right? If suddenly you go on a run where you get lots of clean sheets, but you're only drawing 0-0, then suddenly you're overspending significantly. You're not really going anywhere in the league. In the same way that you look at someone like Charlton this year, right? They presumably pay an Alfie May a considerable amount of money each week. He's the top scorer. He's got almost as many goals as our entire team. He's probably getting paid bucket loads every time he scores a goal. And has it helped them in the league? Not really, has it, given where their league position is? So I suspect there's some what you would call calculated risk going on. There's some miscalculation. There's perhaps some things that were going under whoever's responsibility it was to manage finances under their radar. A combination of all these things, and suddenly you're sat there going, crikey, how did that happen?
So, Ant, what you talked about there, I suppose, is planned overspend, done on purpose to try and achieve something. And, you know, we finished 12th last year, so that was what we achieved with it. And yet, the statements that came out in the summer from the club seemed to, after Steve Cotterill left, the statement that the chairman put out seemed to talk about the overspend in language that it was overspend he'd discovered, not overspend that he'd authorised or that was planned, overspend that had come to light that shouldn't have happened. That's the way the statement read. How do you reconcile? How is that possible? First, as an accountant, is there a way to explain how could Steve Cotterill overspend our budget by £3 million, if that's what it is, or at least the player budget was one, the staff budget is 1 million up looking at the accounts. How does that happen and the chairman not know? Is that possible? And I guess that my question is, how do you reconcile that overspend with the chairman saying he didn't know about it? I don't understand how those things are possible, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about things in a general business sense because none of us know what the budget was, right? The accounts don't say what the budget was. We don't know that. We can make some educated guesses given that the wages were nearly £1 million higher than the year before. That, you know, that doesn't make sense otherwise. But in a general business sense, and you'll see this in the newspapers day after day, businesses do go through these periods where they underperform. And that's not necessarily the responsibility of the directors. The responsibility of the directors is to put someone in place, either themselves or someone in place who will be in charge of the finances of the business. And in many businesses, the directors will allow that person to go and fulfill their duties in the way they see best fit and report to them on a systematic basis or an ad hoc basis or once a year. And ultimately, the directors can then make a decision as often as they see fit as to whether that person is still the right person to be looking after the finances. So you'll see it in, you know, day-to-day businesses losing money or not hitting the results they want. And the directors go, this isn't satisfactory. We need to make a change. We can't tell from what's available if that's what's happened. We can't tell if how often the directors were seeing the financial results, whether they saw it happening earlier and waited to make a decision, whether one day they just found that the spend was a lot higher than they thought and they went, we need to do something about this.
And I think that's, for me, I'm going to loop back to a comment we said a while ago. So the statement was on the 9th of May and it said, the losses obviously unsustainable and devastated the carefully accumulated reserves built over many years. Whilst we continue to monitor and analyse regularly the financial indication of a matter of concern, despite regular financial meetings and warnings that spending is greatly exceeding income and budgets. And for me, the inclusion of the word budget there is quite fascinating. So that's a statement directly from the chairman back on the 9th of May. And obviously, you know, you can't guess, Ant, and you're not going to guess or kind of, you know, say who did that. But there's obviously there's Steve Cottrell, Brian Caldwell.
Well, I can guess.
The
CEO went without saying a word, right? I mean, Ant can't say that because he's a professional, but we can, Ollie.
I know, exactly. And that's why it's, we have Ant to the pod. It's really good to bring us that kind of perspective. But that's why I think for me, it is a question of what happened. Well, Steve Cottrell's gone, and Brian Caldwell's gone. I don't think you need to be rocket science to work out the chairman wasn't very happy, potentially, with those two individuals, or maybe they left their own accord. We will never know. But I think what is really fascinating is that some fans have been saying, I don't know why fans are getting angry. Loads of League One clubs lose money. Yes, but it's planned. There's a huge difference with Oxford United, Charlton, setting a budget at the start of the year, and we go, right, we're going to lose £3 million. That has not been the operation that that Ronald Winchley has had at Shrewsbury Town. I'd never go into a football manager and switch Ronald Winchley, sugar daddy, and he's going to plough £20-30 million into the club like the Bristol City owner has and like the Ipswich owners have done into their club. We're not that kind of club. And I think that's, for me, I think it's a little bit disingenuous to say, oh, loads of League One clubs lose money. Go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you think about an individual's finances, right? You have people want to buy a house, so they're taking a mortgage. The mortgage is a huge financial liability, right? And you might, with no other information, go, why would you take out a mortgage for £100,000, right? Sounds like you've not got £100,000 in your bank. Why would you do that? But if the payments are, 20% of your take-home salary, then it makes financial sense, right? You're buying a house over time. You can afford the payments. In 20 years' time, you're going to have a house that you own outright. And it's the same with these football clubs, right? Comparison is the thief of joy. You cannot compare us to clubs that are owned by people with £1 billion at their disposal, right? To which £3 million is pocket change. It's a completely different model where they are happy to throw money to make losses because they know that if they do it long enough, and we all know that ultimately football is a game of who spends most, right? Whether it's Premier League, League One, League Two, any division, whoever spends most eventually is going to come top of the pile. And that's what a lot of these clubs with owners with deep pockets are banking on. And then you're into the Championship, the Premier League, where the TV income is in a completely different league to League One, or you might be in a position where you can sell the club and actually get your money back. Or you might just be so rich that a football club is a plaything and you want the adulation and the joy of winning promotion and having the fans chanting your name. It's a completely different position depending on who your owner is.
Ant, I know we're going to move on in a bit to comments from listeners and things that we've done. Before we've done that, can I ask one other thing about the accounts from my reading of them? So we've talked a lot of doom and gloom here, 3 million losses, cash reserves wiped out. I wanted to try and pick one figure off the sheet, if you like, that I thought was slightly more positive. So Shrewsbury Town have assets, if I'm reading it right, worth £10.9 million. I presume the majority of that is our stadium. We own our own stadium. A lot of clubs aren't in that position. Their owners have sold their stadiums. They rent their stadiums out. They have to pay rent on income to play in their stadium. So we're in a strong position from that point of view. So am I reading it right that 10.9 million is effectively what our club is worth right now? If you wanted to buy our club, that's the money to own all our assets. And does that at least give us some stability that we have that money, as it were? Okay, it's not money in the bank, but it's value set in our club.
Yeah, so it's slightly better than that, even, Chris. 10.9 million is the difference between the assets that the club has less the liabilities, so any money it owes. So what we call net assets. So you're right, the majority of that is the stadium, the training facilities up at Sundorn, etc. So those are assets the club owns. I mean, I don't think they'd ever want to be in a position where they needed to take out a mortgage on those or sell them off. But you're right, they own them. They've clearly got value. Interesting comment there you make about that representing the value of, if someone was to buy the club, what it would cost them. The reality is you can value a business in many different ways, but a football club is worth how much someone wants to pay for it and how much the current owner wants to sell for it. I don't think it's any more scientific than that. It's not a business you buy, or in most cases you buy to turn a profit every year and therefore, make yourself money. It's really what intrinsically you value it at. And 10.9 million is a good starting point. But I suspect if Shoot Battalion does ever get sold, it will probably be for a number that's different to that.
And one question just on the accounts. So obviously we lost £3 million in the last accounts. But does the club have a lot of debt?
Yeah, no debt other than the amounts owed to the directors, which are interest-free loans at the moment. So no mortgages, no loans with banks or other financing facilities.
And that's, for me, where you've got to give, you know, credit to the chairman and the way he's run the club, that we're not heavily in debt to build our stadium and all that. So we are in a strong position. Obviously, there can be criticism potentially of the last 12 months, what's probably been building up to that, to get into this situation. But yeah, I think it's just worth just kind of pointing out, it's not that we have like huge, like using that mortgage statement, you know, mortgage example, we don't have a huge mortgage payment we need to pay.
Exactly.
And we haven't brought loads of players either, so we don't owe a load of debt there, because that's what's normally where a lot of clubs have a lot of debt, isn't it?
Help me out, and maybe others, if it's all right. If we don't particularly owe anyone any money, we've lost £3 million. It's not our first loss. In recent years, we've run up losses. I think £750,000 has been a regular sort of number in the last 2 or 3 years. So our cumulative losses over the last few years must be approaching £5 million now, maybe more. I haven't added it up. Where is that? Who do we owe that money to then? Where is that money owed? We can't just build up debt and not owe it to anyone.
Yeah, so we're not building up debt. What has happened in years before that, Chris, is the club have turned profits, and that is what you call your reserves in the accounts. Okay, so especially when Shrewsbury sold Gay Meadow and built the new Meadow, that resulted in a huge profit for the club. An accounting profit, didn't equate to cash. There's a difference between profit and cash. But what it meant is from a reserves perspective, the reserves went up to about 12, £13 million. So that the club can continue making losses. It's the cash on the balance sheet we really need to worry about, because that's what keeps the lights on.
That helps. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Because we've talked about the £1.5 million being wiped out this year, but that also doesn't go away. The number used to be much bigger, didn't it? There was a time when our cash reserves of 10 years ago were 7, 8, 9 million, and over the years that's been whittled down, as it were.
Exactly. And it goes back to that losses, unanticipated losses versus planned losses point, right? If a club like Shrewsbury had, if you go back a few years when we made some relatively large player sales, but probably when Paul Hurst left, right? We got the money for Nolan and Siala, and you probably sat on a cash pile then of say £3 million, £3.5 million, and you sat there going, well, actually, if we lost £1 million in cash next year and we use that to potentially buy some players who we could develop and sell, or, you know, we could keep some of our best performing players to have another go at the playoffs, and that would lead to another run to Wembley or even, you know, God forbid, promotion, then is that a calculated calculated risk worth taking? You probably say, yeah, because even if we lost £1 million, we'd still have £2.5 million in the bank. So it's that's the position we were in at that point.
And that's why, for me, it doesn't feel like this was, well, the chairman's statement says that this wasn't in the budget, this wasn't planned, which does raise lots of questions about how the club was run. And I'm not sure we'll ever really find out what happened, unless someone maybe writes a book. But I imagine a few NDAs have been signed over the course of history.
Yeah, I think so. Well, and I just want to, I know we've talked about the club's accounts being historical, and we're looking back to the 22-23 season. You know, my personal view, and again, you can't tell this from the accounts themselves, is I personally would be surprised if we turned that from the £3 million loss last season into a profit this season. And the reason I say that is that players' contracts tend to be for longer than a season. The biggest expense that the club has by some distance are wages and salaries. So a number of our players from last season were under contract into this season. So I'd be surprised. What I would expect to see, based on the comments from the chairman and those coming out of the club, is I'd expect that loss to be lower this year, because clearly some actions have been taken. I wouldn't expect, unless we sold the player now for considerable amounts of money, I wouldn't expect it to be turned into a profit immediately. I think it's going to take some time for the club to redress that and get back into the black.
Yeah, and that was one of the questions I asked you when we were preparing for this podcast on Twitter. I said, you know, how severe would the cuts need to be to break even next year? And I think your summer is very, very deep. And in terms of making that cut, it's like you say, don't necessarily need to name names, but there's a lot of players who we assume are on fairly decent contracts from Steve Cocciolera still with us in our first team, thankfully, in some ways, in our squad at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the other way that you could redress it is if your income suddenly grew. But to do that, you'd need a big player sale. You'd need a cup run. You'd need something significant to happen in that season.
Which has always been a big strength of ours, isn't it? Is that we did have cash in the bank. So we could drive a really hard bargain when we did come to selling players. Just hopefully we did when we, obviously in the summer we sold Luke Leahy and we sold Hearns to Newcastle as well. That's likely to be a deal that will potentially pay off over time. So I don't think we'll see a huge amount come in this year's accounts numbers. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see next year's accounts, Dan, to see what's done to the playing budget.
Yeah, I was going to ask about business strategy there, answer it really, because my instinct is we don't actually need to turn that profit around in 12 months. We need to be, the direction of travel needs to be more positive right now. I guess the assumption there is that the directors may have to dig into their pockets for some more interest-free loans. But I'd have thought the club there's nothing that says we have to return a profit next year. We just have to, I think, for the future well-being of the club, be going along the right path, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, cash is king. We'll keep coming back to it. It's the cash that is the priority. You need the cash to pay the players' wages, keep the lights on. So that's priority number one. If you can then return to profitability, then that cash becomes less of a worry. And then your strategy becomes a little bit about, we're not just making sure we keep the lights on. We want a little bit of money to invest in players, in infrastructure, in whatever it is. The club at the moment, that there are clearly potential events that could happen, like someone could come in and want to buy the club and who had a lot of money, right? That would be a way of potentially lots and lots of money coming in and the cash problem going away. There's obviously pluses and minuses to a deal like that. That's out of the club's control at the moment. What's in their control is how much they spend, renegotiation of contracts, number of players they take on, anything else they can do to manage the position they're in at the moment.
Well, being positive, I'd have thought a performance like we saw on Easter Monday at Bristol Rovers might help, because some of the because I'm not sure anyone came out of that one with any great credit, no matter how much money they're earning. So maybe renegotiating the contracts on the cards.
There might be some players who perhaps wouldn't cost the earth who are looking at that going, I could do better in that team. So who knows?
Question from, we'll turn to some questions from fans here. There's a question from Gareth Bridges, and it'd be interesting to hear about the prior year revision. Because obviously that was changed now. So maybe just explain like what's happened there and what was the number and kind of what's the number now?
Yeah, so when you submit your accounts, you submit them, they're publicly filed with company size. Sometimes what happens is companies a year later, either through error or stupidity or whatever it is, identify something that was done wrong in the prior year. And if we use a term in accounting called materiality, I'll very briefly explain what that is, right? Materiality is whether something is significant to you, being you, the individual, the business, the entity. To you or I, if you went down to Boots with a tenner in your hand and you bought a meal deal for £4 or whatever they cost now, you'd get £6 change. If you went home, right, and you had £5.90 in your pocket, you'd probably go, I'm missing 10p, so what? Okay. If you came back and you only had £1 in your pocket, you'd go, oh, blimmin' hell, I've lost a fiver somewhere. You'd probably retrace your steps, search your coat pocket, because £5's a lot of money. Okay, £5's not a lot of money to Shrewsbury Town. To Shrewsbury Town, we're talking, you know, in the thousands. So if they find a £5 error, they'd go, so what? But if they find an error that was in the tens of thousands from the prior year, they'd probably go, we should probably reflect that in the prior year accounts so that people get a fair view. Now, from what the club have put in their accounts, this is to do with the costs and the revenue attached to the academy. So there's obviously costs attached to it and income that the academy makes. They were omitted last year. Doesn't say why or how that's happened. It just says there was an error and they should have been included. The net impact of those two numbers is it's less than 50 grand, right, on the profit numbers for the year. So it wasn't big from a profit perspective, and perhaps why it wasn't picked up. But they've quite rightly said, we control the academy, it's part of our club, we should be including those numbers in the respective sales and cost lines. So that's the reason for the prior year revision, from what I can see. I noticed Wrexham's accounts came out as well. And again, very different situation, right? Their revenue's gone up massively. Interestingly, the money they're getting from merchandise, I think, and those kind of things, they outstrip the money they're getting from gate receipts, which is quite interesting. Probably shows their plans work.
Yeah, they sold something like a crazy number of shirts.
Yeah, you'd probably go walking around South Korea and see someone in a blooming Paul Mullen shirt, which would make you throw up instantly. But what I find interesting is, for all that, I'm a bit jealous, but I really like the way that, you know, Reynolds and McInerney have gone around the project and stuff. They obviously put money into the business in the form of loans to start with. They're paid 8% interest on those loans, which always seems to be forgotten, right? The darling owners of Wrexham, it's never mentioned that they're actually making a sweet little, you know, bit of side coin from it. But I found that quite interesting to read, that their interest charge is almost £500,000 a year owing to what they're paying on top to the owners. Anyway, that's probably just my underlying bias against Wrexham.
I like that.
It's interesting.
That's been duly remembered for future rants.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep that bit of the podcast. I was just looking at the agenda to try and look at the questions. And so looking ahead to next season, you've already kind of alluded to some of this, Ant. There's a question from a tweet from Andy Davis. He says, the dream of League One prosperity and even Championship football seems like light years away. Should fans be worried about the short-term future of the club and next year's squad we put together on a shoestring? And basically asking is like, is Mickey Moore the right man? And we'll save that kind of part, I think, for the next podcast we do, normal podcast. But going to his question about short-term future, should fans be worried about the short-term future of the club?
I think there's rightly, and this comes inwards from the club as well as just me speculating, is that there should be some concern, right? The club has, their cash reserves have reduced quite dramatically. The directors have put money in the year ended June 2023, but also subsequently, we know that as well. So the club are in need of some change. There's no doubt about that. And it is going to take some time for that to come around. So I think it's right that we're all concerned. I wouldn't say we're on the brink. I think the club have got through the last 9 months. They've clearly got a plan to turn things around. Is Mickey Moore the right person? I know you'll cover that, but I quite like the ideology behind it, of identifying players that perhaps have been overlooked by other clubs that we could turn a profit on. You know, I think that's been done very effectively by other clubs, perhaps with a little more capital, but Peterborough and Brentford, right? That's really their model, is buy players from lower down the leagues, turn a profit on them. And some of the profits that they've turned on individual players has been quite staggering. So I like the theory behind it, the ideology, whether Mickey Moore is the right person. I think we need some more time to conclude on that.
The proof will be in the pudding. Yeah, Brighton posted a £124 million profit, which is an interesting model. So it is going to be fascinating to see how Shrewsbury Town build a squad in the summer. And if we struggle this year with probably making a loss, it'll be fascinating to see how we do perform this next year, Dan. And yeah, Paul Hurst has got a task on his hand with Mickey Moore in the summer to build a good squad for League One.
That's
hoping we're in League One, of course. Yeah. If we're not League One, actually, we'll come back to that, actually. We'd be interested to ask Dan what the risk there is.
But I think that's where Paul Hurst and Mickey Moore will earn their corn. And I think that there's an assumption out there that building a better squad has to involve spending lots of money, and of course we'd love it to involve spending lots of money, and quite frankly it looks like it has involved spending quite a bit more money than we're used to. But if you look at the 2017-18 squad, there's very little evidence of big spending in there. You look at those loanees, and not just the three standout ones, we had other ones through that season who've gone on to have really good careers. So I mean, the loanee market is fundamental to the success of League One clubs, and we couldn't have had a worse season in terms of League What loanees this year. So I'm not saying all will be sweetness and light, because I can't predict the future. But I do think any notion that we have got to spend more money which being critical is very much the assumption I had with Steve Cottrell, I don't think that works, and it can't work. And to be honest, in a worst case scenario, as Anne has alluded to, it gets us in a really bad place financially. So for me, it is absolutely down to Paul Hurst and the team around him to try and craft a squad on very little resources, because that's what we do.
Yeah, Dan, absolutely. And then even the players that supplemented that, you know, Agogo, where was he before Paul Hurst came in, turned him into the best defensive centre mid in the league, probably. Also, we had Matt Sadler, who was a left-back, who turned into a brilliant centre-half. He had Omar Beckles, who was a centre-half, who played
phenomenal
back, yeah, and was in the team of the year. So there's absolutely other ways to do it. But yeah, I mean, fundamentally, football is a money game, right? It's about finding ways to beat the money odds.
Not being, hopefully this won't happen. Hopefully Paul Hurst and the team, I think we might draw our way to safety. And yeah, the fun that will come with that. But what would the impact be from a financial perspective, and if we did get relegated? Would it make the problem worse, wouldn't it?
I would hope, and I think I'm sure the club would do this. When I'm auditing businesses and I'm looking at whether they're going to survive for the next year plus, I ask them for three scenarios. I say, what is your actual budget? So what do you realistically think is going to happen to your revenue and costs over the next year? What's your downside scenario? And what that means is that if sales aren't quite what you expect, if there are some costs that come in that you weren't expecting, what happens then? Can you still survive? And then what's your worst case scenario? The technical term is a reverse stress test. What would it take for you to run out of money, right? For the business to essentially be at an end point. And I would expect any football club, certainly expect Shrewsbury Town to be doing something similar. And I would say their best guess at the moment would be League One football next year. I think we're in there's some chance of us being relegated, but I would hope in the position we're in, with the manager in, we'll survive. What happens then? I'd then say your downside scenario is you get relegated. So saying then, what would our budget be? What would the income be from different sources? What clauses are there in players' contracts that would be initiated either by us or by them through relegation? And then what would your worst case be? It would be, what if those assumptions about attendances, about salaries, etc., were actually, you know, plus or minus 10 or 20 or 30% worse? Could we survive in that instance? So I would expect the club in some way to be planning for relegation. Absolutely not their first point, but there has to be some plan B and plan C and plan D for a club like ours that is involved in a relegation shakeup.
Yeah, fingers crossed we avoid that, because yeah, any Premier League money is going to be significantly less if you're in a League Two team, and if we're banking on that kind of restoring our finances, I think you lose quite a bit of money, don't you, from the EFL, as well as obviously less, you know, smaller teams, less income from gates, etc. So yeah, fingers crossed we don't go into League Two, because that would not be good at all.
Of course, Ollie, League Two this year has been where all the money is as well, isn't it? You look at the clubs in that league, Wrexham throwing it around, Stockport throwing it around. Those clubs are probably going to be playing us next season, along, if we stay up, along with clubs coming down from the Championship. So League One next year, you fear, is going to have more money in it than it does right now, which, does that make our challenge harder, Ant? Would you say?
Well, I was trying to end this podcast on a high, Chris, and you've just taken us into another kind of fit of despair. So yeah, please do answer the question, Ant.
I believe we. You know, it's an exciting challenge, but I do think the division next year will have more money rolling around in it. You'd say at least one of Stockport and Wrexham are coming up, probably both. Mansfield have money in the bank. And then it looks like at least one big club is coming down from the Championship. So there is going to be money in our league, isn't there, in a way that maybe there hasn't been this year?
Yeah, there's going to be money in our league. You think Reading and Wigan are going to start on 0 points next year, which, you know, is a bonus for them compared to this year. I completely agree, Chris. I think there'll be more money. Back to my previous point, money generally wins in football, therefore it'll be harder. But the only positive that I can see is that, as a result, a lot of these clubs will probably be spending money on established players and not taking a risk on, you know, on unknown, unproven players. That could be where Paul Hurst digs up some uncut gems, or some gems that, you know, are already there and just need the chance to prove themselves.
Yeah, it's always the summer is always exciting because we can hope and dream we're going to do better next year. It will be interesting to see what the counts look like again next year, see what that loss is. And yeah, hopefully we can have a better summer and hopefully a better year last year. But it's, yeah, the financial situation doesn't make that situation easier. But hopefully we can turn it round. And it does make you wonder, you know, what is the future for Shrewsbury Town in the next couple of years? And yeah, maybe whether some investment could come in and improve the finances of the club. But yeah, questions that unfortunately we can't answer. So any final questions, Chris and Dan, for Ant before we close the podcast?
Not really, but I just wonder what your general feeling around the club's confidence is. And again, it's speculation. This is not something you can read out of the accounts. But do you feel that the reset, and it looks like there has been a reset, is that those who have done the resetting genuinely believe that we're on a path towards a bit more sustainability? Or is there something deep down that says to you, I'm not quite sure where this is going to go?
Yeah, I think they're confident they've got a reset plan in place. I think the big unknown is we don't want to just reset. We want to get into a position where we can, you know, we can invest in players again. And the big unknown is whether it's a youth player who comes through our system or whether it's someone we sign who we then sell for big money, or, you know, we just have a unicorn season next year and get promoted to the Championship. They're not completely out of our control, but pretty much out of our control. And we have no idea if our next superstar is going to be 6 months away or 6 years or 10 or 15 years away. And I think that's the difficulty, right? We can get back on a safe track, on a place where we're comfortable with, you know, the club, and it's got reserves to keep the lights on. But in terms of, you know, pushing on to the next stage, having the ability to try and compete a bit more financially with some clubs in and around us, the likes of Wrexham, Stockport, and the bigger teams already in our league, that's the challenge. That's the real.
Wrexham are losing tonight against Doncaster. It's one that they ain't coming up. They ain't coming up. Seriously. Well, okay, maybe they are. But yeah, understood.
Eventually. But yeah, thanks very much for joining the podcast, Ant. We really appreciate your contribution. Hope enjoyed's maybe the wrong word, but do you ever really listen to a Shrewsbury Town podcast for enjoyment? Because we don't really normally win. And these, I think these accounts are in the similar vein.
I think that's
true. Now we're bloody, it's true.
That's why people listen to the podcast, Ollie, is that to get their Shrewsbury Town enjoyment, I think.
Appreciate that comment. Okay, so thanks for joining us, guys. And yeah, we'll be back again in a week or so to talk about some draws and a loss or a draw. Yeah, draws.
I fancy a draw on Saturday at Pompey. Ollie, is that where you're going? If that is on offer?
A draw, a point away at Pompey would be nice. They're currently losing to Derby, so they'll be quite pissed off. So yeah, let's see how that goes. So yeah, thanks very much, guys. And yeah, we're back again soon.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, everyone.